Will Florida State be better in 2025? Today, we're talking about reasons that we are confident that they will be. What can we take to the bank? And we are also going to share our concerns on why things might not get that much better if these things were to happen. Also, is QB1 writing a check that Florida State can't cash? We're going to talk about that as well. And the Seminoles stay hot on the recruiting trail with even more recruits. We just can't keep up with enough recruiting shows. So we're going to touch on the latest from the recruiting trail there as well. And don't forget to stay tuned to the end for a new surprise segment that we're debuting on the show that I think you guys are going to enjoy. We're going to have a lot of fun with that. So, Michael, thank you for joining me, my friend. Excited to get in this one. Lots of football talk again as the season is closing in on us.
Yeah, man. Grateful to be here. And FSU is hot, caliente. They are, you know, flamethrowers when it comes on the recruiting trail. El Fuego. Exactly. It's so good to be there. And also, last I checked FSU's bank account, they didn't have a lot of money. So I hope TC is not writing bad checks because you can go to jail for that, bro.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to talk about all that. Thank you for joining us, Noel Nation. As we talked about, I'm Jesse, that's Michael, and we are Plant the Spear. Now, we are going to start with the recruiting talk because, like you said, man, Florida State has been fuego on the trail. They are up to 12 commitments in the month of June already, and they are not done yet. Now, before we jump all the way into recruiting, let me quick remind you guys that, again, the season is almost here, Michael. We are less than 10. Tomorrow will be 9 Saturdays, depending on when you're watching this, from kickoff against Alabama. There has never been a better time to join the PTS family here. Drop a like and subscribe to stay connected. We are going to be rolling out as much content as we have time to put out for you guys. You can also join the PTS tribe by clicking that join button if you're watching on YouTube. If you'd like to support us with one low monthly cost there, there's going to be exclusive benefits for members as well. Just want to give you guys a heads up that we do have that opportunity out there. Rate and review on the podcast and check out our website, plantthespear.com. I'm telling you guys, we are going to have you guys loaded up with content. So make sure you do that to stay connected. And we appreciate you guys' support as well. We were just talking about earlier, Michael, this is going to be what, season number 4 for us.
That's right.
As a Plant the Spear outlet, and season number 3 with Michael here as well. So, man, we're excited for another season. Lots to talk about. But the one thing to talk about right now, Michael, is recruiting, because Florida State, look, the only thing hotter than this summer, and let me tell you what, buddy, it has been a hot one. Your boy almost fell out. As we say in EMS where I work, DFO, done fell out. I almost DFO'd at a concert the other day outside in Charleston in the pit because it was so daggone hot. So Florida State is the only thing that has been hotter than the summer here in the South. So like we said, Florida State is up to 12 commitments in the month of June alone.
Yeah.
We've done 2 previous shows talking about recruiting, so you can find those on the channel to go back and watch those. We talk about all the commitments that they've got this month. But the 3 that slipped in after the last show that we're going to cover on this one starts with 3-star offensive lineman Jacoby Green.
Yeah.
6'3", 335 pounds, man. If Herb Hand is doing nothing else, he is building a wall up front in Tallahassee. I mean, he is bringing in some massive bodies for this offensive line. The thing here with Jacoby Green that makes his commitment fun is he does claim that he is a lifelong FSU fan. So he says this is a dream for him. Received the offer in late May. He did talk about how he knew what last year was, and he knew some things had to go a certain way for him to get this offer, but he's not worried about that. He's just ready to come in and work. So right here out of the, you know, basically your backyard in Quincy, Florida, Gadsden County, number 50 interior offensive lineman in the 2026 class. And of course, he was a flip from Mississippi State, was committed there to the Bulldogs. So 3-star offensive lineman, Jacoby Green in Florida State's 2026 class, another massive offensive lineman for Herb Hand.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is a big pickup. I mean, he's a big body. You know, we call it the, you know, you should start calling it the big garnet wall, you know, that Herb Hand is building there. Did you know that Jacoby Green played some defensive line in high school as well? He had 24 tackles, 9 TFLs, 3 sacks. And so you got this guy who understands what it's like to go up against an offensive lineman.
Yep.
Now moving to the offensive side of the ball, big body. Again, we need more and more healthy offensive linemen so that you could just keep throwing numbers at the problem.
Yeah. And I think he's getting some big bodies, and the last one they got too was a two-way player.
Yes.
So yeah, I like the versatility among these guys too. Now the next one here was a big flip for Florida State, mostly because it was a legacy. So it was really nice to get him in the fold here, and that is four-star defensive back Jay Timmons, son of Lawrence Timmons, FSU linebacker in the early 2000s, first-round NFL draft pick, and Super Bowl 43 champion. So, I mean, the bloodline here on Jay Timmons, you can't ask for any better. Four-star defensive back, 5'11", 185 out of Gibsonia, Pennsylvania, number 32 cornerback. We already got the number 14 that's quarterback, right. So we ain't got time for no number 32 quarterback. Number 32 cornerback in the 2026 class, and he was a flip from Indiana. Yep. Now, he did earn the offer directly from Coach Norvell during an elite camp. I believe it was in May, so it actually was kind of a late offer here. But once things aligned, he knew Florida State was going to be the place for him, obviously with the legacy ties there, because it's kind of funny. He said he's not really a big sports fan growing up, but he has always been a Florida State fan and has always been his dream school, obviously, to follow in his father's footsteps. There is a two-way player, plays well above his 5'11", 185 frame. He can create turnovers and is a thumper. And so, I mean, that's the thing, man. He plays hard, he plays fast, and he plays physical. He has shown the ability to excel in press man and zone coverage. So this is a big get for Florida State. I mean, I know some people might, you know, see the Indiana name and not get too excited about a foot from there. But, man, I mean, not only do you land a legacy, but you get a blue-chip DB in your class to join an already impressive and growing defensive back class for Patrick Surtain and new defensive coordinator Tony White.
Yeah, I mean, Jay Timmons had a strong showing at the June camps there. Literally, that from the moment he started showing up there, all the coaches were on him. Then Mike Norvell personally says, "Hey, I want you here." And there had been some consternation about, you know, he was a legacy recruit. You know, Florida State hasn't always done the best in recent years with legacy recruits. As you know, you think about Julian Armello, you keep going on some of the recruits that just haven't really panned out. But this kid just kind of popped off the charts against them. And to me, Jesse, I ignore because he was only recruited by, you know, the likes of Indiana and Wisconsin, Syracuse, Vanderbilt, Maryland, West Virginia, Pitt. Listen, he had 24 offers from Power Four schools.
Yeah.
These schools wanted him. He can be a contributor, and I'm excited to see how he fits into this new defensive backfield.
Yeah, and I don't want it to sound like we took a flyer because we wanted to get the legacy in the fold. I mean, you're getting a quality defensive back here too. And obviously, like we said, with really good bloodlines here. So I'm excited for the pickup here. Now, the last one we're going to talk about, the most recent one that just happened yesterday, if you're watching this on Friday when we record, might be the most interesting prospect in Florida State's 2026 class. Yes. And, you know, the funny thing was when you texted me that they landed him, at first I was like, wait, who?
Who it is?
The name was not really one that I was familiar with, but that is four-star standout dual sport player Jason Lopez.
Yeah.
So four-star wide receiver is what he's listed at on the football field, 6 foot, 185 out of Miami, Florida, number 43 wide receiver in the 2026 class, number 252 nationally, so almost a top 200 recruit, number 39 out of the state of Florida. And really what stands out here, man, obviously he had some other big offers, Miami, Florida, Georgia, West Virginia were your top contenders here, but Miami was believed to be the favorite. They had the last official visit. So really this was big for Mike Norvell to kind of stuff Mario in the locker for a South Florida recruit right there out of his backyard that they wanted, you know, and man, when you talk about this kid, right, we'll talk about the basketball side of things later, because I know if you're watching on YouTube, you're probably looking at like, why is this kid in shoulder pads holding a basketball? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But man, when we talk about the football side of thing,
come on.
This is like Javon Boggs, right? When they landed Javon Boggs, when you see his numbers, you're just like, this can't be real, right? Yes. This has to be like a video game on rookie mode. So in his sophomore year at True North Academy, before he transferred, we'll talk about that in a second, he had a 1,200-yard season with 16 touchdowns and 73 receptions. And so then he transfers to Chaminade Madonna in South Florida there, one of the toughest divisions in South Florida high school football. So, like, you're doing this against the best competition. So this is where you're really going to test to see how good this receiver is. Well, Michael, then he goes and puts up 1,300 yards, 14 touchdowns on 87 receptions last year, including an 11-catch, 256-yard game against American Heritage. Sounds kind of like they need Patrick Surtain back there at American Heritage if they're getting shredded like that. But, man, I mean, just the the production is unmatched, man. It's just, it's insane. So I'm super excited about this kid and to have him in the fold here. Just a really dynamic, fluid mover, good route runner, actually already pretty polished. Maybe could add some mass to the frame there.
Yeah.
But man, you're getting kind of a really dynamic athlete here. And I'll kick it back to you on this because you know more about basketball than I do. So you can kind of tell us how this sounds well, if it sounds good or not. But he is going to end up playing both sports for Florida State. Coach Luke Laux was involved in this recruitment as well as the football staff. So that's kind of already been pre-negotiated there. That's one of the big draws that he had to Florida State. He talked about in his post-commitment comments where he said, like, I've seen where Florida State has done it with dual sport athletes in the past. They actually highlight them and get them up on a high level. And so you're talking about a four-star basketball prospect as well, ranked number 122 nationally, number 12 amongst point guards in the 247 sports rankings. Last year, he averaged 25 points, 6.4 rebounds, 4.1 steals, and 2.2 assists per game. And he shot 45% from the field, 34% from three-point range, and he has averaged over 21 points per game the past 2 years. So, man, I'm just going to assume that sounds as good as the football stats, but man, the football stats are already eye popping and the basketball sounds pretty daggone good too. So this is a good pickup for the Seminoles football and basketball program.
Absolutely. Mike Norvell and Luke Louts combined on this recruitment, which we've seen that before where, you know, where Jimbo and 11 and combined to get Jameis to get here. Like we've seen that a lot with I'm thinking of the track star kid that's currently there right now.
You're talking about Danzy.
Yeah, Danzy, who's doing both track and football.
And you also have B.J. Gibson.
Yeah, B.J. Gibson as well on baseball as well. So Florida State has a history of doing this, and they do it really well. What stood out to me, Jesse, was, yes, you read his junior stats. His combined stats so far, and he still has a senior year, is 257 catches for over 4,200 yards and 48 touchdowns.
That's ridiculous.
That is wild. I mean, that's
ridiculous.
That is wild. And you stole my point about the Javon Boggs. I mean, right now not even coaches. These are players who are unscripted, who are talking about Javon Boggs. There's a likelihood that if we can, you know, finalize this kid and get Lopez on campus as a signee, he could be that up-and-comer next year that they're talking about. I mean, this kid's got great skill. Now, for his basketball highlights, 25 points per game as a point guard is pretty good. His 2.2 assists is kind of low for a point guard to be that way, and he's an average three-point shooter at 34%, but good enough. You know, obviously he'll probably take a jump in his senior season playing basketball, but for Florida State, who doesn't necessarily always have access to this level of an athlete at the basketball side of things, this is a pretty good get for them. This is likely going to be either their point guard coming off the bench this year or their starting point guard at least next year, or at least their starting point guard next year as well, too.
Yeah, and I imagine he's probably going to go on a football scholarship.
Right.
So I think with this recruitment, it's kind of like, For basketball, you're getting access to that athlete, right? And for football, you're using the basketball side to help recruit that athlete for you. So you can kind of sell both visions. I mean, who wants to go to Miami and play for that dumpster fire of a basketball program?
No, that's worse than Florida State.
Essentially. So, 15 in a row, I think, or something crazy like that. So, yeah, exactly. But as we bring it home to talk about the recruiting momentum that Florida State has had as a whole throughout the summer, because honestly, man, I think this might be more unseen, unpredictable than 2-10 was. Yes. No, I don't think anybody saw this coming. Nope. And so I want to talk about Tribe 26 and just the recruitment that Florida State, the job they've done so far. And so when we look at Tribe 26 as a whole, right now you're currently up to 20 commits. 13 of those are blue chips, according to the 247 composite, which is a 65% blue chip ratio, which is very good for this class. And in the 247 composite rankings, the class currently sits at 8th. So, and 3rd in the ACC, if I believe there, behind Clemson and I think Miami. So you're still, man. And the thing is, I think when we talk about this, we have to keep in mind that they're not done, right? They're still in it for 5-star DB Chauncey Keenan. They're in for it for a lot of other guys that are coming up here that are going to have some recruitments, some commit dates in July. But man, I just want to give credit to this new staff for how they're recruiting, right? This, not only me, but I feel like this is probably goes for everybody who's watching this as a Florida State fan. But from my own personal perspective, Michael, this really does give me a lot of hope for the future direction of this program, because when I saw the staff was first assembled, we know the circumstances, you know, the hot seat and all that stuff. We know the circumstances that it was assembled under.
Yeah, right.
And really outside of Gus Malzahn, who was a guy that has a history of good recruiting at Auburn, he's landed top 10 classes, did great at UCF there. I felt like the majority of the staff was probably hired for their coaching acumen rather than their recruiting skills, right? And yeah. And recruiting is something that we've known. It's like the second arm of the comeback, right? We want to see it get better on the field, but it's got to get better on the recruiting trail, because it's kind of a big reason why you ended up where you're at.
Yeah.
And so to see this staff, a staff that I didn't really expect this from, to be doing this good on the trail already coming off of that season,
right,
man, that gives me a lot of hope for the future. And again, I do want to, you know, I always want to stress this, like 70% of this staff had nothing to do with 2-10.
That's right. That's
nothing.
Right.
But you're also getting a guy, Gus Malzahn, that you could probably say was pushed out at UCF. Yep. And then, yep, you know, Tony White, who had a good defense on a bad program or a bad team. And so, you know, just to see what they're doing right now coming off the season that Florida State, the program, is coming off of, this is really impressive. And they deserve credit for that, because we have hammered this staff, or not this particular staff, but we have hammered the staff in the past for not recruiting good enough. And of course, obviously, guys, I know where you finish on signing day matters most. I get that. Trust me, because we had the same momentum going last year.
Right.
And then things fell apart very fast once the season started falling apart. So you got to back it up on the field. But Michael, I talked about this a little bit on the last show. If they're recruiting like this off of a 2-10 season with hot seat talk for your head coach and all this type of stuff, and you can back it up on the field with, like, say, maybe they surprise on the field like they surprise on the recruiting trail and they win 9 games. Who knows? Man, this program, Florida State, can be turned around so fast. And there is a spark in Tallahassee right now. And so this has me excited, because I think that's one thing that some of the people that maybe outside of Tallahassee lose sight of. Like, you know, you talk about some of the other programs around the country. Can they get this thing turned around? Will they be able to do this? Maybe they change coach or whatever they do here. Man, we've seen it with Florida State so far, how it can go from struggling to the top of the college football world like that.
Heartbeat.
And so you have a class like this. You keep pushing this class into a top 10 class. I like a lot of the pieces they got that have addressed needs that they have. You keep building on this class. You back it up on the field. This can be a real transitional class for this staff. And I'm very impressed with what they've done so far. And I think they deserve a lot of credit for it, as long as they can back it up throughout the season.
Absolutely. FSU fans should be absolutely impressed with this latest recruiting haul. Like, we should give them their flowers. We were super concerned about what was going on, if they were recruiting, if we were just going to be much of the same. It was dead. We weren't hearing a thing. There was no vibe whatsoever. And then, like hotcakes, it just takes off. Now, can you say some of that might be attributed to the new rev share and trying to get the deals in before the July 1st due date, when everything turns over to the rev share so they can get as much money? Absolutely. But who cares?
Right,
we've got these people in the fold. We got these students in the fold. It's a testament to the staff's relentless work and the program's continued appeal. It is still an iconic brand. Even 2-10 can't take that away. But as exciting as these commitments are, we understand that this is only half the battle. Like, the real win comes when these kids sign their letters of intent, and even more importantly, when they turn the hype into production on the field, right?
Yep.
And Florida State has to win on the field, or it's not going to matter that you had all these commitments in the summer, because they're just going to end up going everywhere else. So, like, Florida State fans, let's be excited about the momentum, but let's not forget, they still got to go out on the field and make it happen, and then they still got to sign these players at the end of the year.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the thing. We just have to couch it with that every time, because if you didn't, somebody is going to go in the comments and be like, well, they got to land them first. Clearly, like, we did that part. We saw what happened last year when you didn't. But I mean, I just think, like, man, this is what football's supposed to feel like again, right? It's almost, it's like, it's strange because you don't know how to feel, because you're like, oh, we have positive things to feel good about again.
You don't know if you can trust it.
What is this strange feeling? Is this heartburn or something? And so, like, it's exciting, man. It's exciting to see. But again, you got to finish throughout the regular season and sign these kids. But man, I mean, I didn't see this coming. So if they can back it up on the field, this gives you hope that, you know, this staff in its current rendition. And again, I only think you're going to have Tony White for so long.
Right.
But I do think, man, you can really get this thing back rolling with a couple, one, two good years and a couple of good classes.
I agree.
But the next thing we're going to talk about here is quarterback number one, Tommy Castellanos, writing checks that maybe Florida State can't cash. I don't know. We'll see. I talked about it a little bit on the last episode, but Michael wasn't with me on that one, so I wanted to get his opinion as well because I know he feels a little bit different than I do on this one, but we share a lot of the same feelings. So let's do a couple of quotes here that he said to On3, I believe it was, in the last week that definitely set fire to social media. And so the first one, well, actually, this is the second quote that came out, but he said, and I quote, "I feel like I tore the ACC up by myself for the last 2 years, and now I'm with a squad. I hope people don't think that Florida State is going to be the same team it was last year because we have weapons. People can't just sit back in zone coverage and watch me." Michael, I don't have a ton of problem with this particular quote, but I do not love the very first line.
Yeah.
When you are 5-8 against the ACC as a or as a starter at Boston College, I don't think you were tearing much up, right?
Yeah.
And so you weren't doing a whole lot of tearing up there.
Yep.
So I don't love that part. Now, I talked about this last week, and I'll throw it back to you so you can share your thoughts on it. But I love the confidence from the quarterback. And we talked about this before where – last year, you had what felt like no confidence in at the quarterback position with DJ, who just really kind of felt like a fly on the wall, who was kind of going through the motions. So I like the confidence in him, but there's a difference between confidence and arrogance. And it's kind of sounding like, you know, maybe that guy that won the lottery for the first time and you know, where it's almost like this is the first time he's been part of a real big program with big time athletes. So you can see it's kind of pumping his head up a little bit there. I love the second half of this comment, though. I really do. I hope people don't think that Florida State is going to be the same team it was last year because we have weapons. People can't just sit back in coverage and watch me. I think there's two things to take away from that, Michael. I think the first thing is you're building confidence in your teammates. And I like that because they see this. Everybody saw this all over social media.
Yeah.
So I like that. And I do think, you know, back to the point where I said before, where this is kind of the first time you ever got keys to a Ferrari. When you talk about people can't just sit back and watch me in coverage, I think that's true, right? I mean, again, let's go back to the point I always make with Thomas Castellanos.
Yeah.
Michael, he didn't have Zay Flowers, so he's out.
Yeah, exactly.
Name me one Boston College wide receiver.
I can't.
You can't. And so that's the thing, man. I think he really is excited for the opportunity to be surrounded by top quality athletes. And so, you know, I don't like some of the comments that he made, but I don't really hate some of the comments that he made either, the ones that are more like team focused. Yeah. So, Michael, give me some thoughts on this first one, or let's just go ahead and get the second one out of the way first, and then we'll talk about a couple other ones. The other one's the one we talked about last week, and that was Alabama doesn't have Nick Saban to save them. I just don't see them stopping me. This was a check I think you maybe could have not written because that is going to be bulletin board material. Now, I'm not going to go backwards on what I said on the last show. I like the confidence. I think it's good to have a confident quarterback.
Yeah.
I just, man, like, I think when you talk about this comment, and this goes to the same, like we talked about with the staff. No, he was not part of 2-10. He should not be sitting here hiding scared because of a team went 2-10 that he wasn't a part of. That had nothing to do with him. Matter of fact, he beat that team, that 2-10 team.
Yeah.
But I think you need to read the room because you're talking smack when you joined a program who did go 2-10.
Right. Right.
And you're putting added pressure on a coach that already has pressure on him.
Right.
And a program that already has pressure on him.
Right.
You know, and so I'm okay with being confident, just maybe a little bit more humble. My thing is, you know, he's talking like Cam Ward was last year.
Right.
You know, I'm the best and this and that. But Cam Ward went out there and backed it up.
And proved it.
And so the question is to Tommy is, can you know, put the bite behind the bark?
Right.
Because, and I don't mean this as a joke because I'm a Tommy fan. He's our quarterback. It's a little bit of that, you know, this ain't a joke because he's 5'9 or 5'10. A little bit of that Chihuahua syndrome, right? The smallest dog in the room is always going to be the loudest and the first to bite. And so I hate to say that about our quarterback. But, you know, 6'4". 350 DJU or whatever he was, He didn't say much. Yeah, he's kind of like the Rottweiler, but yeah, I think the Chihuahua syndrome come out a little bit. But I love you, Tommy. If you're watching this, I promise that's not a dig at you. It's just, man, I think some of these were a little bit uncalled for, but I do love the confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I got to be honest. I mean, hearing Thomas Castellanos say, you know, that we're going to, you know, I'm going to tear the ACC up like I've always have, which we've proven is factually not true. And that Bama doesn't have Nick Saban, you know, that's coming through those doors. It might be the boldest thing I've heard come out of Tallahassee in a hot minute. Let's just be real. Right. Yeah. And you know
what? We want Bama chant, basically.
Exactly.
I don't know that we want Bama right now, let's be honest.
Last time we said that, our quarterback got injured and the season went awry. So we might want to be careful about that. But you know what? Here's what I'll say. Good. FSU has been way too quiet and cautiously optimistic for far too long, right? It's nice to hear a Seminole quarterback again grab the mic and talk like we haven't been living in Clemson's shadow for a decade, that we're not Bama's little, you know, toy to be playing around with, right? But here's the thing about confidence. It's free until the scoreboard shows up, right?
Exactly.
The ACC ain't trembling just because Thomas dropped some spicy comment from a 2-10 team, right? You got Clemson that's retooling. You know, Miami's desperate to matter again, right?
Yeah.
Louisville is sneaky tough. And even the teams that you think in the ACC might be pushovers beat us last year, right? Yeah. They humbled FSU last year. And the Bama line, don't get me wrong, it's funny and I appreciate it. But let's not pretend that Nick Saban's retirement just suddenly turned Tuscaloosa into like a charity case. They still have some of the best athletes in the country, right? You know, Bama doesn't need saving. They're just going to plug the next five-star cyborg in and reload that dynasty machine, especially now that DeBoer has got his, like, right-hand man back, the Ryan Grubb guy, to come run the offense. So, yeah, talk is fun. The team should talk big. They should be confident because it's the first time in a long time that they think they could actually back it up. But we have seen FSU teams run their mouth in the summer. Mike Norvell said, we have the biggest and best offensive line I've ever had, right? Yeah. And then forget how to run block in the fall, right?
Yeah.
So if Thomas wants to tear up the ACC, it's going to take more than, like, you know, him talking about it. It's actually going to take, you know, smart football and no turnovers and real depth and throwing the ball and running it and actually being successful and converting on third downs and stopping the run, all those things, you know, not just against the team you should beat, but the teams that maybe you aren't scheduled to beat. So bring the swagger. Lord knows we need it. Right. Just don't forget to pack a run game or a healthier line or a defense on the field. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, you can, it's win the game, show, do the talking on the field, not in the press conference.
Thank you.
I agree with that. But again, I'm not mad at the confidence. It burned up social media. And so we had to talk about it, but you know, it's one of those things where if you win, great. It looks fine. No one cares. If you lose, you're going to look dumb. And if you lose like 34-7, you're going to look real dumb. And so you just got to back it up. And most of the time, these things don't work out, you know, in your favor, but you just got to back it up, man. And if you can do that, and again, I like Thomas Castellanos. I think he's doing the things necessary to be a better quarterback in 2026 or 2025. And I think him in this offense, which was something that else that came up in that too, you know, he talked about, and I'll throw it back to you in a second, but you know, he talked about some of the things that happened with Boston College and Bill O'Brien. And, you know, he talked about a little bit how that offense that they had just wasn't really built for success. And then he got banged up and things just didn't really work out. And, you know, so he's excited to be in an offense that will kind of just let him do his thing. A little bit of what we saw in 23 and a little bit of what we saw in 24. And so, I mean, he was open and honest about a lot of things here.
Yeah.
And I'm not mad at the confidence because I think he has put in the work this offseason.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just think it's one of them where you need to calm that down a little bit, maybe just be a little bit more humble until you've proven yourself on the field. Right. You know, you weren't Cam Ward coming in, right?
Right.
And like you said, man, and you can elaborate on this if you want to, but this may be one of the reasons why there could have been some issues in the locker room at Boston College. But, you know, again, I like the confidence. I just think it should be, let's be confident when we have a reason to be confident. And that's after we've won games on the field. Yeah.
Listen, no one's saying to Thomas not to be confident. No one is saying that you need to get up there and be like, yeah, we're afraid of Bama. They're scary. Exactly. They want all this. Exactly. No one is saying that. There's nothing wrong with saying, hey, you know what? Bama, just like us, they got to lace their shoes the same way. They got to put on their cleats the same way. They got to get on the field the same way. And then when we get on the field, we'll see who's the best team, right? Who wins the game? We're not afraid of them, but we also respect our opponent, right? But to get up there and say, Nick Saban ain't coming to save, like, man, come on, man. FSU ain't got no cash in that bank to be trying to cash that check. And Bama, they did not need any more bulletin board material. Now, I always love the fact where we say, oh, they got bulletin board material. If Bama wasn't motivated to play this game, nothing else was going to help that make possible. So I appreciate that fact that he wanted to be confident. And again, my point to you, what you just said about the end there is, if this doesn't go well, if Florida State gets their butt handed to it, it's 41-7, 41-3, whatever you want to call it. Well, now you look at a toxic locker room of everybody looking back at you and be like, bro, why'd you have to say that, man?
Thought you were going to tear them up.
Thought you were going to tear them up, right? And then every rival fan base all year long be like, I bet Florida State going to tear them up, you know? Like, it's just no, man.
It's unnecessary.
But it was unnecessary. Yep.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you there. And again, I mean, like I said, I don't mind being confident. I don't mind building up your teammates and things like that with some you know, milder comments. But, you know, let's tone it down until we see. And I also, like I said last episode, man, I don't really buy into bulletin board material. Like, I get it. You're more motivated against rivals and things like that. I understand that the stakes might be higher in the game.
Right.
But I don't think Alabama was going to go into this game like, well, you know, we don't really need to win. Yeah. Oh, he said what? Oh, now we're definitely winning. Like, that's not how that works. So, but yeah, it was unnecessary more than anything. But man, you back it up. Hey, you'll be the hero instead of the goat. We'll see.
Exactly.
So the last thing we're going to talk about here is our confidence and concerns for 2025 for Florida State. Now, what the context of this is when we were coming up with the shows for the remainder of the preseason here, we were just kind of looking back, and I had the idea for this where I told Michael, I said my context behind this was like, we do expect Florida State to be better, you know, in 2025 for sure. But what are the things, we're going to name three apiece. What are three things that you can take to the bank? Like in 2023, I knew daggone well, we had Jordan Travis, we had Jared Verse. I didn't know who Braden Fisk was yet.
Not at the time.
But I knew we had two dogs. I knew that defense was going to be really good. I knew we had got some stacked receivers. I could take that to the bank.
Yep.
There were some other things like your backup quarterback situations or, you know, the some of the depth that you had that kind of kept you up at night. Like, how is this going to work out? So that's essentially what this is. What are some of the things in 2025 from the outside kind of looking in as still it's summer? We still haven't seen fall yet. But what will make us go to sleep and close our eyes and sleep better at night knowing we can take these things to the bank? What are the things that are going to cause us to lose our sleep on how Florida State, how much better they will be in 2025? So we're going to start with confident. We're going to start on a positive note, and we're going to go back and forth. Now, me and Michael actually had, you know, we don't mean to always agree on the show. And I promise we do talk about this beforehand, but like typically we don't give like all each other's notes, but we actually had two of the three that were about the same. So we're going to kind of run them concurrently here. But to start with, the number one reason I think I am most confident that Florida State will be better. Again, we don't know how much better is, but that they will be better in 2025 is better coaching and better buy-in. And when I look at this staff, Michael, you know, we talked about, when they assembled the staff, it was more of a high floor staff. Like, maybe you don't see Gus Malzahn winning the Broyles Award, you know, this far into his career. It's possible.
Right.
But this was one that's like, okay, they have proven themselves enough that they are good coordinators. We don't know if they're elite or not. I'm not going to put them in that boat, but they're pretty daggone good. They can get you 8 wins.
Yeah.
And you just got, and then I think it's more than just the coordinators, man. You look at Herb Hand, like he's been the offensive coordinator at Texas, the offensive line coach at Texas, I think at Penn State, you know, a bunch of different places. He's produced. You had Alex Atkins, who had been at Charlotte. You know what I mean? So this is just a higher caliber of staff. And so I think that, you know, you got Zach Arnett that's in the fold there as a head coach off the field. So like, I like some of the coaching moves that they've made. I feel like they're going to be more prepared for these big games. And I also think the buy-in will be better this year because when you have more of that, you know, you had talked, this was something that I really hadn't heard a whole lot of, but you had told me before in the past where, you know, it had just got to the point where not that Fuller was a bad defensive coordinator, but his messages really just kind of stopped getting home. Yep. And so I think once it was falling on deaf ears, you had to make a change. And so I think by having these more kind of alpha dog head or coaches on the staff and by having some more proven guys and by having a confident leader like a Thomas Castellanos, like some of the other veteran guys that you've brought in, I think you're going to have a lot more buy-in and accountability this year as well. So that's my number one. And I know you had something similar. So go ahead and give me your thoughts on that one.
Yeah, I thought, you know, what gives me confidence is the fact that we went out and got new coordinators. It felt like the coordinators that we had, you know, you had Alex Atkins, who had never really called an offense, who'd never really done much of that. He'd been an offensive line coach. He basically came in and had a couple good years. He could recruit, but he could never really develop. And at some point you just start wondering, we're paying him all this money to never call plays and not develop offensive linemen. What are we doing here? And then, like you mentioned, like Adam Fuller's he had lost the defensive side of the ball. They weren't listening to his voice. They didn't feel like his defenses made sense. He was becoming third and Kelly. We were calling it third and Fuller now. You know, it'd be like third and 15, where the percentage of conversion is super low across all of college football, except against Florida State. The conversion percentage was super high. It was ridiculous. And so Mike Norvell finally recognized this. And Jesse, this was a problem in the Jimbo era too. Jimbo would hire these coaches and he just didn't want to fire them because they were his friends. They were whatever it was. And Mike had gotten to that point where it's just like, Mike, the fans have long recognized these coordinators need to go somewhere different. So I feel confident that Mike went out and actually got coaches that are going to challenge him and are going to be decent.
Yeah. And I think having the dedicated OC, it's just so undersold, man. That's so huge because, one, I think you need – I'm a big fan of the CEO head coach type of deal with everything going on. So I like Mike Norvell in that role. Not that I don't think he can be a good OC, but I definitely like a dedicated OC, a real OC. I think that's huge, man, for this team in 2025. And, again, you got a defensive coordinator here who has come in and competed against the ACC. He's competed against the Big Ten. He's competed against the teams he's going to go against. You know, not that Fuller was a bad guy, but he had been at Memphis and I think like Wagner and Marshall. So it just wasn't the same caliber. Now, the point number two that gives me confidence, the thing that helps me sleep better at night, is more proven transfers.
Yep.
And what I mean by that is this is kind of getting back to old school Mike Norvell and company with what made them successful. We saw in 2022, we saw in 2023, they brought in guys that had proven production on the field, whether that even be G5 or not. You had guys who had shown you they could play the game. Then in 2024, I think they kind of got lazy and they got a little arrogant thinking that, oh, well, we're just going to go get, you know, some backups from Bama and Georgia and these things, and it's all going to work out. And that proved to be a terrible strategy. There was reasons those guys were in the portal. There were reasons those guys were backups. And they just did not produce because they had no history of production. And so now I think you come into this year with the guys that you have. You know, Elijah Herring is a guy with he was Tennessee's leading tackler, Memphis's leading tackler. You bring in the Deontay McCrays. You bring in the Gavin Sawchucks. You bring in these guys who have done it on the college football stage. And I think that alone, you know, to me, Luke Pettibon is one of the biggest additions you've made from Wake Forest. You know, a team captain there, a guy who's got a ton of experience. I think that that is the number two reason why I feel better. Like, maybe some of these guys aren't elite or stars or, like, you know, the Keons of the world or things like that, but you got guys who have put up stats and played in these moments. And that's one thing that really, I'm really happy to see they got back to that strategy where it made them successful previously and they got away from it and it fell apart. So, man, this is the almost 1A, 1B on why I feel so much better about 2025.
Yeah, absolutely. Last year, coming out of the snub, Mike Norvell and crew felt like, you know what? We're going to go get these high potential, you know, big program backups. And we, even us here at Planet Spirit, we got sucked into, well, this guy played at Bama. This guy was at LSU. This is that great potential. They don't have a lot of stats. And I remember we joked pre-show that, you know, when Jesse starts to starts to prophetically speak about negative things around the program, they tend to come true. And so last year, looking back, I remember you saying like, hey, it's great that they have these programs, but we don't see production. So it's really curious. And of course it turned out to be what happened, right? They could not produce. So I love the fact that this year they went back and they got actually productive players who've actually played and produced stats that were good enough to start and to make a difference. Yeah, they may not come from the bigger programs like Georgia and Alabama, like that stuff, but they produced. And let's be real. When we go back and look, when they got a Keon, when they got a Jared Verse, when they got a Braden Fisk, when they got the Jerrion Jones, when they got guys like that who had produced other places and then come in, you saw the production. You saw what they did. So yep. That gives me confidence that they went out and got players like that, and Squirrel White and Deuce Robertson and Thomas Castellanos, that they got production.
Yeah, 100%. And man, maybe we'll do a whole episode on this, but I really honestly feel like Squirrel White is the most overlooked player on Florida State's roster right now. I really do think that guy can be an X factor. We'll talk about that in another episode coming up. But I think that's just huge, man. And of course, you want to see whether they can translate from that lower level. If that's who they are, you know, some of these are guys that come from Tennessee and USC and things like that. So they're big school Power Four transfers. Some of these you'll have to see how they pan out. You know, the Diggs kid from Coastal Carolina, how's that going to look? You know, because Grady Kelly was one that didn't work out, right? That did not translate. But your best transfers that you've taken, one came from Louisville, one came from Albany, one came from Western Michigan, Keon came from Michigan State. It doesn't always have to have an impressive logo by it to mean that they can play. And so that makes me feel a lot better. Now, my point number three, we're going to differ on our number three point, so I'll go ahead and throw mine out there, is controlling the ground game on both sides of the ball. And this, to me, is huge, right? Because Florida State was pretty, well, let's not say pretty. They were friggin' awful at running the ball last year. Right. But they also have always kind of been mediocre on run defense. And so that's something that I didn't like either. And now when you go and you look at the coaches that you've brought in, I mean, these are guys where Tony White's defense is run defense has been great. I mean, they've been like top 10 run defenses 2 years in a row at Nebraska. I think they didn't even allow a single rushing touchdown at home last year, which is nuts to even think about. So, man, I'm so excited about what that aspect does for you, just being able to run the ball on the ground, you know, because whatever Gus may or may not be, the man is going to run the ball. And if you want to get a little bit more expounded on what I'm talking about, we do have an episode on the channel. It was four data-driven reasons why Florida State will be better in 2025. I suggest you go watch that. I can link it in the description because I do dive into that a lot more. But when you look at the success that Gus Malzahn has had on the ground, on the offensive side of the ball, I think that just raises your floor, man, because being able to run the ball is so key. And Florida State was so poor at it last year. I think that's going to be a big difference. And then Tony White's defense just being able to control the run, man, I think that is going to be big for Florida State. That is an elite run defense. And so those two things right there, controlling the ground game on both sides, make me feel so much more confident in where Florida State's floor is in 2025.
Yeah, I do. Listen, here's what I'll say. The last thing that makes me most confident is a very simple thing. Mike has no other choice.
Yeah.
That's
it. He's backed into a corner.
He is backed into a corner. He is in a win now mode, right? We've all said this. We've talked about this all offseason long. Unless it's eight games, Mike, you're literally putting yourself on the chopping board.
Yeah.
If it's worse than six games, it should be for darn sure you're done. Yeah. Now, I the thing is about this season, what I hope doesn't happen is that he wins only six games and we're in this like 6-6, 7-5, and it's kind of murky. You're not really sure.
That limbo,
that would not be fun for the fan base. I either want a definitive 8-4, we're good, or
Rip the band-aid off and go for it.
And you're out. You're done. Yeah. I'd rather that be. Now, I hate it for our fans. I hate it for me. I hate it for you, Jess. I hate it for Plant the Spear. But I'd rather it be one way or the other so that we can have a clear definitiveness. Yeah. Mike doesn't have a choice, which gives me confidence, actually, because I've in some ways seen Mike when we started 0-4 and he was backed up against a wall, basically probably going to be fired if he had lost maybe the next game or so. He came out swinging. Went 5-3, then went 10-3, then went 13-1, and then backed up against the wall. Mike is a dangerous Mike, so let's see that Mike come out. That's what gives me confidence going into the season.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that's a great point because the thing is, man, like I know we don't know what Mike Norvell is, right? We've seen the swings at this, like I would probably have a few more years left on my life if we had just been like 7-6 or 7-5 or like 8-4 or something like that. It's the swings, man. It's the swings. It's the 2-3 win season, the 10-13 win season. It's all over the place. You don't know what he is. But what I think about that's important is, man, like when Mike Norvell got here, you know, and this is not to trash on Willie, but when Willie got hired, it was kind of like, are y'all sure? Like, is he ready for this?
Yeah.
When Mike got hired, he was endorsed by so many people throughout the coaching industry.
Yeah.
He had had the success at Memphis. And maybe you could argue that he inherited Justin Fuente's success. He also did take this program from a dumpster fire to 23-4 in one point. I don't think Mike Norvell is a bad coach. I just think he's had a couple of tough breaks and 2-10 should have never happened.
Correct.
So, yes, I do think, like you said, man, when you're backed into a corner and they are going, you know, I hate to say this expression, but like we're family-friendly show, but balls to the wall in recruiting. I expect it to be the same way on the field. Like you just don't let anything hang out. You got nothing to lose, man. And so I definitely like that point. Now let's flip over to the concerns that we have for 2025. Okay. And I do want you guys to understand that this is not us being negative in any way.
Right.
These are just the things where when we go into that season, when you get into that stadium, when you get into the newly remodeled Doak Campbell Stadium, and it is about to kick off versus Florida State versus Alabama, what in the back of your mind is going, oh, please, please just let this happen, right? Let's not let this look like a train wreck. These are the top three things that are kind of on my mind going into the season and Michael's mind as well.
Yep.
As far as concerns that we have. So the first one for me is quarterback play. I mean, obviously, Tommy's talking a big game, but can he back it up? Now, I think the fortunate part for Florida State is Gus Malzahn's offense does not need an elite quarterback to be good. We've talked about this 100 times before in the past. But good quarterback play makes that offense a whole lot better. That's right. And if we know Tommy can run, that I have no, you know, I have no concerns about that.
Yep.
But can he throw enough to keep this offense balanced? We know it's going to be 60-40 run heavy anyway, but if he can't threaten you with the pass, which is exactly what we saw happen last year with DJU. You had no pass game because you couldn't protect the quarterback, you couldn't make accurate throws, and you couldn't catch the ball. That's a little bit more than a quarterback problem. But we saw teams crash down and basically disrespect Florida State in the pass game to be like, we know that you can't run the ball either. And so does this turn into a similar situation where because you can't throw it effectively, now you can't do the one thing that Gus Malzahn does the best, and that's run the ball? And so, you know, again, I do want to make it known, like I said, I'm a fan of Thomas Castellanos. I think he's a better quarterback than a lot of people think he really is. When you look at some of his downfield passing numbers, they're on par with Jordan Travis, almost even better. Still, though, he has a career completion percentage of 58.6%, 33 touchdowns, 19 interceptions. He's only thrown for over 200 yards in 9 of 21 games.
Yeah,
that's not great. And so I think he's going to have the best season he's ever had from a simple standpoint of, this is what we talked about a little bit early in the earlier segment, by having the necessary pieces around him to allow him not to be the entire team.
Yeah.
And then I also think he's finally going to be in an offense that is going to kind of let him do what he wants to do while also doing what it wants to do, a little bit of kind of mixture of both there. So I think he's in for the best season that he's ever had. I'm concerned that it could not look good. And if it doesn't look good, what does that do for your offense? So, man, quarterback play is probably the top concern that I have this entire season.
Actually, and I totally hear that concern. And that's actually probably one of my, you know, maybe like four or five. But my top concern, if you take to that, is this very fact. You don't have an alpha dog on either side of the ball that you know of right now, right? So, I mean, let's think about the great Florida State teams that we know about, right? So the 2023 team, who was the alpha dog on the offensive side? Well, you had a couple. You had Jordan. You had Keon, right? Mostly probably Keon, right? But you had Trey Benson as well, too. Then on the defense, you had Jared Verse. You discovered Braden Fisk. You had Shaheem Brown, right? You had Akeem Dent. You had these guys who were like, they get up in your face, stab your mama, and then not think twice about it, right?
Exactly.
Like, so you had those dogs. Let's go back to the national championship season, right? You had Jameis Winston. You had LaMarcus Joyner. You
Jalen
had
Jalen Ramsey,
who was clapping your face and didn't give a darn about you, right? Getting
girlfriend's DMs before the game.
Exactly. Oh, I forgot about that. Yes. Exactly. I mean, you go to the 90s, you had P-Dub, you had Winky. You could keep going. You had Snoop, you had all those guys. They were alpha dogs. The best Florida State teams had alpha dogs on both sides of the ball. My concern is you don't know who that is. Now, I see Tommy Castellanos trying to be one, but you can't be one in the media. You got to go on the field and prove that. That's a big concern for me. And that actually plays in the part about your question about quarterback. Like, who is the leader of this team? Who's going to go out there and command these guys to give their best and be in their faces when they're not? And then also, who's going to like show up to the field and tell these opposing teams, hey, today is about to be your worst day ever, you know?
Yeah. And the thing is, when you talk about like those alpha dogs and stuff like that, you know, there's a point where like guys in practice, so your teammates see through your BS, right? Yep. So if you're out there just kind of running your mouth, but you're not playing good, they're not going to buy into your leadership.
That's right.
But I think this is a great point, man, because this was actually one that I considered for my top three. This is something that's probably about four or five for me as well. I think this is I've said this about 2025 Florida State for a while now. I think what you have is you have a pretty nice collection of good college football players.
Yep.
But what you lack is that high-end star power like you talked about. And so maybe there's just someone on this team that we don't know about. Maybe that's James Williams. Maybe that's I almost called him Snoop Menace. I wish they had Snoop. Come on back. Maybe that's Squirrel White. Maybe it's one of those guys that just emerged. We just don't know yet. But I don't love that you don't really have at least one or two alpha dog type of guys. And so that does concern me a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, my number two here for concerns is depth in the trenches, and that can go for both sides of the ball. I think it's really more concerning for me on the defensive side because I feel like, with the offense, if you can stay healthy, I love your starting five. I think you have a pretty serviceable sixth or seventh man there, depending on how the starting five shakes out. What I worry about from the defensive side of things is one injury puts you 20 steps back. And not only from a just talent perspective, but like Tony White, one thing that he talked about in his introductory press conference is how he's very much locked into the 3-3-5, right? That's just that's what he's done. But he says, man, this is a very multiple defense. And he even said that like half of the reason he runs a 3-3-5 is because early in his career, he started somewhere where he could not really recruit a depth of good defensive linemen. So that means if he has that depth, he wants to be multiple. He wants to go to even fronts in some situations. And so, like, if you were down a Daryl Jackson, man, who do you got after that? You don't have a lot of guys. You only have, like, six defensive tackles on the roster. And so, like, of course, you got the hybrid guys who can move around and squeeze inside and do things like that we've seen with them in the past. But what I worry about, Michael, is just the depth on both sides of the ball. If you get two or three injuries in the trenches – man, I think that could affect your win total by two or three games.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, if you can really get these pieces to actually show up and like do what they're supposed to do. I use a baseball term, the WAR, right? Wins above replacement. This could actually help you garner a better outlook around the season with that. Now, I would say one of my other concerns, probably my second level concern, is more so around this offense. We've watched Gus Malzahn from his Tulsa days to being the offensive coordinator for Cam Newton winning a national title to being the head coach at Auburn and getting his butt whooped by Florida State to going to UCF, right? And one of the things that is very true that I've seen over and over again is that if you can make a Gus Malzahn offense one-dimensional, it is a 99.9% chance you are going to win the game. Because while, yes, Gus Malzahn will call 60% of the time run plays, the run sets up the pass. It's different where usually the pass sets up the run. The run sets up the pass so that they can take the deep shots. You'll see a lot of sideline throws, east-west throws, and then you'll see the north-south stuff, right? Because that's what he wants to set up. He wants to run the RPOs. But if you can shut that down, if you can shut down the passing game, make Thomas Castellanos a one-dimensional player, which now his gifting, his stronger skill set is running the ball, but you put those corners on an island and you say, hey, take away the passing. We're going to put 7-8 in the box, maybe sometimes even 9 in the box, because we are going to make sure they can't beat us over the top. it gives me grave concern that you don't have a quarterback outside of running who can actually make something happen to where he can get a receiver open. And what happens then when that's all you can do? So I am concerned about the one-dimensional side of this offense, that you can't just go to a nice, you know, Mike Norvell special wheel route out of the backfield, or you can't run a dig route because that's not in the route tree there. You know, whatever it may be, I'm concerned about that moving forward.
Yeah, because if you can lock up this pass game, I mean, you can essentially turn that offense into a triple option, and then you just got to hope you can run the ball. Right. And I mean, let's be honest, man, it's a little bit of trepidation that I have too, because just go ask a UCF fan about Gus Malzahn's offense, and they will tell you in a heartbeat that they are glad he is out of town. But I do think he's going to do better in his role as just a pure out offensive coordinator. Yes. I also think that Mike Norvell, while he is handing him the keys, I think he's going to kind of be like the OnStar in the car too. So I do think you're going to see them kind of like, he's going to guide a little bit of things. Yeah. And so I think a blending of concepts will do a lot of good for both offenses from Mike Norvell and Gus Malzahn's perspective. But yeah, I mean, like you said, if you take away that pass game, it can get scary quick, and you just hope that you can really run the ball. So yeah, I think that's a great point. Now, the last one for me, Michael, here is not something that I would even say is really a concern, but it's something that's been on the back of my mind since this hire was announced. And it's something that I would say more than a concern. I'm interested to see how it plays out at Florida State. And I'm going to elaborate on why I say that.
Okay.
And that is Tony White's defense against good offenses. And I'm not talking about Tony White's defense in general. I'm talking about against the better offenses that you face on your schedule. And the reason I say that is when he was hired, my biggest trepidation with the hire, and I love Tony White. Like, let's be honest. If things didn't work out with Mike, I kind of hope we would just promote Tony White, not Gus, but Tony. But man, I think with this, I was like, okay, well, you're coming in as a highly touted defensive coordinator who played against a bunch of kind of crap offenses in the Big Ten. And that does concern me a little bit.
Right.
Because when you look at what he's done against good offenses, he's had a few games get away from him.
Right.
And so what I did is I went back and looked at his time as a defensive coordinator. Throughout his time at Syracuse and into Nebraska there, and that is five total seasons, he has only faced in five seasons, only faced seven top 25 offenses in the past 5 years as a DC.
Yeah.
Now, when he faces a top 25 offense, he has allowed, his defenses have allowed an average of 36.7 points per game against them. And it was 40.6 points per game at Nebraska. He's allowed 30 plus points in five of those seven games. The scores were 56 to Indiana last year, 21, 45, 38, 45, 21, and 31.
You're breaking my heart.
Like I said, some games have got away from him. Now, obviously, things are going to change for the teams that are on Florida State's schedule in 2025 because, again, you're talking about an offense like Alabama that's replacing a lot of pieces, including the quarterback. But remember, he's faced seven of those top 25 offenses in 5 years. On Florida State's schedule in 2025, three of those teams had a top 25 offense in 2024. So you're almost like half as much right out of the gate. And so, man, the other thing, too, when you talk about the offenses that he faced at Nebraska, 33% of the offenses he faced were ranked 100th or below. And as we know, the ACC is a better offensive conference typically than the Big Ten. The Big Ten has good defenses. And so it's kind of the chicken or the egg question, Michael. Like, is the Big Ten's offenses, are there offensive struggles because they have really good defenses? Are the ACC struggles, you know, on defense because they have really good offense? It's hard to say.
Right.
But when you look at the defenses that were ranked 100th or below, like I said, 33% at Nebraska, only 14.7% at Syracuse. So you can see how much tougher that's going to get. And the reason that I think that matters is just, again, look at the history here, and then I'll give a couple more things, and I'll wrap this up.
Yeah, but you're good.
So in 2024, Nebraska scoring defense was 17th. The average offense they faced was 70th. They had four teams ranked 100th or below, and they gave up 30 plus points in only two games. Great defense, not a big slate there. His best defense that he's had as a coordinator, 2023, they were ranked 13th in scoring defense. Because again, I don't care about total defense. Some people like total defense. Yards don't matter. Points do. So 2023, 13th ranked defense, average offense they faced was 86, and they faced four teams ranked outside the top 100. They gave up 30 plus in only 2-point games. or in two games. So then we get back to Syracuse. A little bit tougher here. 2022 defense was ranked 40th. Average offense was ranked 68th, and only three teams were ranked 100th or below. Gave up 30 points in three games. 2021, 64th ranked defense. Average offense, 61st. So what you're seeing is that scale is balancing. And this is obviously, this is going to be like, well, duh.
Right, yeah.
That. But you see what I'm saying here. 64th ranked defense, average offense, 61st. Only two ranked outside of the top 100, and they gave up 30-plus points in six games that season. And then 2020, his first season as coordinator, there's a lot of asterisks you can put by this. 90th ranked defense, average offense was 45th. Zero teams ranked outside of the top 100, and they gave up 30-plus points in eight games. So let me just elaborate on a couple quick points here.
Okay.
What you saw with that is the scales balanced. The worse the offense they faced, the better the defenses they had. And obviously, that's a duh, Jesse. I get that. But what I'm saying to you is you're probably not going to be playing that terrible slate of offenses in the Big Ten that made those defenses look so good. And again, against the better offenses, some of these games have gotten away from him. But the reason I say this is this is more something I'm watching than I'm concerned about is, for one, I think he's going to have you can also see where, like, the situation he took over at Syracuse was probably took some time to fix, right? Maybe the same here. But as he progressed as a coordinator, you can see things, because that was his first coordinator, his first Power Four coordinator job. You can see things got better, 90th, 64th, 40th, 13th, 17th. So he got better throughout his experience. The other thing I think is big here is this is going to be the most weapons he's had on a defense so far, right? When you look at the defenses or just the talent composite that 247 puts out every year, in 2024, Nebraska was the sixth most talented team in the Big Ten. In 2023, they were the fourth most talented team in the Big Ten. So they were very much top half and very much had good defenses. Man, a Syracuse, now keep in mind, this is back when we were a 14-team league in the ACC.
Yeah.
In 2022, Syracuse was 13 out of 14 in talent. In 2021, they were 14 out of 14 in talent. And in 2020, they were 13 out of 14 in talent. So Florida State is usually top three. So I think him having the better pieces to work with will probably cure a lot of this. But that doesn't mean it's not something I'm still nervous for in the back of my mind. Because when you come out, like, I think you're probably going to be benefiting in that Alabama game from them having a new quarterback. But what about that Clemson game? Where that's you got, you know, they had a top 20 offense last year and Cade Klubnik's back. About half the team is back, you know, the, whatever they do up there in Clemson to make everybody come back. But could some of these games get away from him like he did with against Indiana, like he did against Michigan and things like that, man? That's the thing that is something I'm just watching. I feel really good about where we're at against the Stanfords, the Wakes and things like that of the world, because he's done well against them. But man, them top tier offenses, them top 25 offenses have not always went well. And so that's something that I'm just keeping my eye on in 2025.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a big concern. You're absolutely right to point that out. To see a Tony White led defense go up against actually good offenses, which he's going to encounter a lot more in the ACC, does give you pause for concern. Is it going to be what we saw against Indiana? Is it going to be what we saw against the better offenses in the Big Ten when we have more better offenses in the ACC? The chicken and egg conversation makes a lot of sense. And I think it also makes a lot of sense in with my last concern, chicken or egg. Is Mike Norvell an actual good coach? Is the 19-0 and 23-7, 23-4, whatever it was, is that real Mike Norvell, or is those are just fluky seasons? And is the 3-8 and the 5-7 and the 0-4 start and the 2-10, is that Mike Norvell? That is my concern, right? So on top, my confidence is Mike Norvell has no other choice. My concern is the fact that we're not sure which Mike Norvell. You pointed this out. We're not sure which Mike Norvell we're going to get. And so I'm concerned that maybe we've seen the real Mike Norvell, and it just so happened that we got a blimp of what a alternate universe Mike Norvell could look like.
Yeah. And I think that's big, man. That's a huge point, because I think really what 2025 is for FSU fans is we're searching for a direction for Mike Norvell. Right. Like, who is this guy? Like, because again, you know, like I talked about before, we haven't even had a middle of the road season yet. We haven't even had that 7-8, just kind of mid bowl season. You know what I mean? That's just like, okay, well, this was not great, but it wasn't terrible. It is what it is. It's either been good or god awful. Yeah. And so like that's just kind of what I think a lot of us are looking for right now, yeah. You know, and I think that's what we're hoping to find out from 2025. And I hope it's in a good way, because yeah. I definitely give him credit for that 22 and 23 season. He assembled them, but that was a lot of NFL talent on that yeah. team. And so,
right.
like you said, man, who is the real Mike Norvell? Is it 3-9, 5-7, 2-10, or is it 10-3 and 13-1? Like, what is this going to be? And I think this season is going to go a long way in telling yeah. us that. And you know, if the bad side is the real side, it might be the last side that we see of Mike Norvell.
Yeah.
So and again, man, I just want to say that, like, we're not trying to be negative, but I want it to work out for Mike Norvell, because that's right. what's best for the program. It does not benefit Florida State to pay whatever it is, $60 million to fire them and then have to fire the rest of the staff and replace right. everybody. It's not good. So I want them to win. So those are the points that we have that make us feel more confident that we can take to the bank why Florida State will be better in 2025, and also some of the biggest concerns that we share for 2025. If you're watching on YouTube and you can leave a comment, drop us a comment. Let us know what you think about what we've talked about in the show today, whether you have some confidence concerns, what right. you thought about Thomas Castellanos, what you think about the recruiting. So we're going to wind it down with the very last segment here, and this is the new one that I said we were going to debut, and it's completely ridiculous, Michael, but I thought we should include it in every show, because you know what, Michael, right now in the world, especially for Florida State fans, really, we need more positivity in the world. We need more laughter in the world. We need more fun in this world of ours. And so I thought with the last segment, I came up with this on my own. I told Michael about the new segment, but I didn't tell him anything about what it was going to be. So this is news to him too. That's what makes it half the fun. I'm just going to call it like the random segment, maybe the 2-minute drill, because we're only going to spend about a minute or two on it to close the show out here. But I just thought it'd be a fun way to kind of a anything goes topic to close out the show, to kind of have a good laugh, or maybe you learn a little bit more about us or something like that. We're going to try and make it somewhat football related, but some of these are just going to come out of left field. So I'm just warning you guys now. So make sure you stick around. Let us know in the comments if you enjoy this next part. So Michael, here we go.
Here we go.
You ready 2 minutes for this?
On the clock.
All right. Now I'm going to go ahead and I'll give my answer first, because I'm completely throwing this out of left field. And I promise you, this one is so ridiculous that you're going to be like, what did you just come up with? All right. So I made it football related, though, because it completely was not football related. And if you are from the South or you have ever lived in the South, this is going to make a lot of sense to you. If you haven't, I apologize. You probably don't even know what I'm about to talk about. So, Michael, Florida State season is on the line, and it's up to you to save it. We can go to a national championship, but it all comes down to Michael. But you got to win a battle, man. This ain't coming for free.
Okay.
So you get a choice of which opponent you want to defeat to put Florida State into the national championship here. Would you rather have to battle 100 palmetto bug-sized alligators or one alligator-sized palmetto bug? And if you're from the South, you already know them palmetto bugs are about the size of an alligator anyway. And so for me, Michael, I know this is the dumbest thing I've probably ever come up with. I'm going to take 100 palmetto bug sized alligators over that one alligator sized palmetto bug, because I'm two stepping through all the alligators, just a splat, 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 splat. I'm taking them out. I don't like gators anyway, so I'm happy to stomp 100 of them out. So I think I'm going to fight the bugs, because the thought of one palmetto bug sized palmetto bug already makes me uncomfortable. The thought of one the size of an alligator, buddy, I'm hiding, I'm running, I'm shooting, I'm doing whatever I got to do. I'm getting the heck up out of there, because that's a scary thought for anyone who's ever lived in the South. So welcome to the dumbest segment I've ever come up with, but I thought it'd be fun. So here we go.
Listen, I had to look up what a palmetto bug is, because just so
you're from Florida, you should know,
bro. I've only been back for almost 3 years now, so I forgot what it was. And it's the moment it came up,
that sounds like a helicopter going by.
The moment it came up, I literally got like the heebie-jeebies that went through it. Oh, I can't imagine an alligator size palmetto bug. Absolutely not.
That's nightmare fuel.
That is not. I'd rather crush 100 palmetto bug sized alligators than a alligator sized palmetto bug. That's the stuff of nightmares. I'm gonna dream this tonight, man. Why'd you do this to me?
Oh man, but it would be a battle for the ages to send Florida State to the national championship. But I'm telling you, I'm like Snoop Dogg. I'm just crip walking right across all them little alligators. Splat, splat, splat. So.
Yes. Crip walking across that. I love it.
I'm going with the 100 bucks. So, guys, if you enjoyed that segment, let us know if we should keep it in the show. If you have a crazy good one for us, drop it in the comments. We'd love to hear it. Like I said, we'll be doing these probably at the end of every show, just with the last minute or two, just to have some fun on the way out the door. We may do some ones where just your favorite moment at Florida State, some favorite things like that, just to kind of, you know, talk, keep it football related, maybe get to know a little bit about us. But just thought we could have some fun at the end of the show because, again, we all need more laughter in this life. So that's going to do it for today, guys. We enjoyed talking with you about some Florida State football. If you enjoy this episode, make sure you drop a like and subscribe. Consider joining the channel to help support our efforts here at Florida State, or excuse me, at, well, that too, at Plant the Spear, as we are your fan-driven source for FSU content. And so we do it for the love of doing it. That's it, man. So we appreciate all you guys' support. Give a rate and review on the podcast. Helps us reach other Noles fans. Remember to check our website, plantthespear.com, the hub for all of our content. I've been knocking out articles left and right with all these commitments. I can't even keep up, Michael. My computer's about ready to give out on me. We've got all of our videos and everything are over there as well. So make sure you check that out. But we appreciate you guys joining us, and we will catch you on the next episode. Thanks for watching. And as always, go Noles.